J'ai tout remis en question, ce que j'ai pu apprendre à l'école.
Se dire, comment je fais avec les pucerons?
As you become the seeds of change in any place in the food web.
En m'intéressant non pas à ma plante dans mon champ, mais en m'intéressant à mon champ dans un environnement que je contribue à fabriquer en quelque sorte.
Proven local practices combined with scientific knowledge provide the best guidance.
Ça n'a rien à voir avec ce qu'on a pu apprendre dans les lycées agricoles classiques.
Donc l'agroécologie, ben, c'est, on allait dire, ça fait partie des savoirs traditionnels de n'importe quel paysan ou paysanne du monde entier.
Le meilleur concepteur d'outils, c'est le paysan.
C'est un très fort niveau de technicité, l'agriculture économe, autonome et la vraie agroécologie.
Et puis de pouvoir comme ça durer pendant des années sans abîmer mon sol, sans abîmer le petit morceau de planète qui m'a été confié.
It's not going to be, not only going to be individual actions that's going to make a change.
Que veut dire l'intelligence? L'intelligence, c'est pas forcément sortir le premier de Polytechnique, je veux dire.
We need to all get behind associations, movements that are going to change the system.
It's not only techniques, but it's also a tool to change our society.
Hello again, and welcome back to our podcast series about knowledge transfer in agroecology, hosted by six organizations from different European countries, all working under the Erasmus Plus project, Bridging Generations in Agroecology. In our last episode, we heard from Martin Vopold-Bosin and Elena Shatberashvili, both of whom spoke about facilitating civil society and indigenous peoples in the context of global food governance. And today, we will hear more about the challenges and confrontations that occur in those spaces. Our speakers are Stefano Prato and Sofia Monsalve. Stefano describes the four spaces of global governance to take into consideration when advancing the agroecology agenda: Rome, New York, Geneva, and Nairobi. These spaces are traditionally disconnected, and it is therefore crucial to reconnect the struggle amongst the various global spaces, as well as reconnect the social movements which act within those spaces. My apologies in advance for the audio quality during the final minute of Stefano's talk. Let's hear from Stefano now.
Good afternoon. My name is Stefano Prato from the Society for International Development, and we'll share a few concerns with respect to the role of civil society in global governance. Well, the first and framing thought is that in fact, this is probably one of the most challenging turf we have ahead of us, because many of the issues that we've been very often confronted from a thematic entry point now converge in a process that is fundamentally reshaping the way in which our governance systems are advancing. And therefore, it is fundamental to read no matter what our particular thematic entry point issues from a governance angle. Now, this leads to exploring the connection and disconnection between a number of different policy spaces that are also geographically located, and therefore the relation between what happens around the UN General Assembly, which is housed in New York, around the processes that converge in Geneva, around health, processes in Rome around food, and to be added, processes around Nairobi, in which the new United Nations Environmental Assembly is located. And therefore, explore a little bit the extent of connection and disconnection between the four. The four critical spaces are New York, Geneva, Rome, and Nairobi, which is somehow very often not adequately considered. So New York, of course, is the location in which the UN General Assembly takes place, and the overall sustainable development agenda is shaped, discussed, and reviewed. And this has taken mostly the form of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Discussion process. In Geneva, there are two important poles. One is, of course, the health pole around the World Health Organization process, and the second one is the one related to the Human Rights Council. And of course, they intersect and interact, but to some extent, they are somehow distinct. So you can look at Geneva as a bipolar context. Of course, the third one is Rome, which has been the core of the food agenda with all the Rome-based agencies, and in particular the Committee on World Food Security. And the fourth one is Nairobi, traditionally the location of one UN agency, but of late became another normative space with the establishment of the United Nations Environmental Assembly. In a notion of health, which has been heavily medicalized, are patients. And patients' rights are very different than the way in which we frame rights around food in the Rome-based context. And, you know, the relations between actors in that respect are sometimes convergent, sometimes not convergent. Now, when we look ahead, we need to recognize that in all those places, independently from social bases, independently from taxonomies, independently to the extent of participation of NGOs versus social movements, which vary across the four, there are a number of common challenges. The first one is, and probably most pervasive, is that the concentration of economic and political power that we've experienced over the past 10 to 20 years has completely altered the policy advocacy challenge in some respects. Very often we found ourselves as groups advocating for change to policymakers who are the primary beneficiary of the current concentration of economic and political power. And therefore the social base of our quests is fundamental, because the kind of propositions that we are proposing to policymakers find no interest in those we are talking to, unless we do have a very strong social base. But in many countries we are confronting with a polarization of that social base between an increasingly radical fringe that do not see space even for a reformist agenda, because he wants complete system change. And on the other hand, the restoration of a strong right-wing conservative movement. And this leaves the center somehow in which many reformist agendas in policy advocacy are grounded, very thin in terms of social base. So and I don't think we have completely realized that we are trapped in between an agenda which is an agenda to reclaim a power that we've lost because of the concentration of economic and political power concentration, and at the same time that polarization of the social base that doesn't make it very easy to have a very strong social support for our advocacy challenges. So that's one important challenge we haven't completely woken up to. A second challenge comes from the very pervasive private first, private best philosophy that percolates down in every conversation, whether it's health, it's food, any dimension of the SDG agenda, ecology, and so forth. And that's quite interesting, because we are confronted with the increasing demise in the public opinion of the neoliberal agenda, and at the same time we see how much grip it managed to have in the UN-centered global policy discussion. So that private first, private best is percolating in all spaces, and that's what we confront everywhere. But despite the fact that this is an agenda that we've exposed throughout the years, I do not think we have fully understood how this has transitioned over the past years. Right now, we confront a reality in which financialization and global finance is the one calling the shot. And very often, we're still stuck in a fairly traditional labor to capital, which very often is physical capital or is impersonified by traditional corporations, rather than the global finance behind. And the reality is the way in which global finance have evolved, we need extractive modality and subordination of the real economy, changed somehow the policy configuration. We're not confronting so much the traditional tension with the private sector in the organization of production, but much more opaque and indistinct, and very often not even easy to understand finance players that actually control the process from the back. So there has been a change in the dynamics of power that has shifted power much more in favor of these extractive finance system. And we do not even know who the players are. And they very often not clearly identifiable. So, and I'm not sure we have completely woken up to this. So these for me are the two major challenges in our situation. Now, therefore, the issue of governance becomes central. And in looking at governance dynamics, we see a number of things happening within the meso and the macro space. Very often within the meso national space, there is a loop in which that predatory economic model that has led to the concentration of economic and political power can only survive in a context of shrinking democratic space and very often security state. And the way in which this has found a way to justify its existence is by cede sovereignty to the international space with increasing agreements of different forms, monetary trade, investments, and so forth, that move sovereignty out from the national space, try to pull it out of the national contestation in international organizations. And unfortunately, what happens then in international organization is we have the increasing penetration of multi-stakeholderism that pulls that sovereignty out of legitimate spaces under democratic controls in favor of spaces which are opaque and very often infiltrated, if not dominated, by the very economic corporate elite that we are confronting at all levels. So we unfortunately are in a very huge sovereignty challenge, and that requires a response. And that response cannot happen locally only. It requires a global response within those spaces and require a recognition of the need of a collective agenda far more pervasive than we've had in the past. And therefore, our challenge as civil society is first and foremost to promote greater shared understanding that we actually confronted the same challenges throughout and build a collective narrative. Continue to resist within the local level, but recognize that that resistance will not be able to tackle the root causes of the problem if we don't engage in reclaiming the control over global institutions and their own democratization. Therefore, the local and global agendas have always been connected in our narrative, but I think they have never been so central in the transformation agenda as they have been today. Thank you.
Thank you, Stefano, for framing the advocacy challenges we face in these governance systems and how global politics is trapping us between a polarized social base and power-hungry private sectors, financialization, and politics. We will now hear from Sofia Monsalve, who will dive into the challenges of civil society organizations in the Committee on World Food Security.
Yes, my name is Sofia Monsalve. I'm FIAN Secretary General. As FIAN, we have been working for long years in order to have the human right to food and nutrition at the center of the food governance, be it at the local, at the national, at the regional, or at the global level. And in that sense, we have engaged in the UN Committee on World Food Security and the United Nations organized or specialized agencies on food and agriculture. So it's a bit unusual that a human rights organization engage in the spaces of food and agriculture. In fact, we continue being the only one, which is a pity in that sense, because we think women's rights organizations and other rights organizations could be here as well. Well, in that sense, we have engaged since 1996, at the time of the first World Summit on food in Rome, in working on the UN agencies, especially in FAO and especially in this committee. We think that the UN Committee on World Food Security, the CFS, particularly after its reform in 2009, this year we are actually celebrating 10 years of this reform. And I have to say that despite this big achievement that was had made possible, that those most affected by hunger and food insecurity, as for instance landless people, workers, migrants, peasants, fishers, pastoralists and indigenous peoples, despite having achieved that, they are now able to speak by themselves and to have a voice in this body. And despite them putting forward solutions that they have worked out in the ground, we are not celebrating this. It's a bit of an irony that instead of celebrating this achievement, that we have achieved concrete results, we are rather asking ourselves why is it that the number of hungry people in the world is increasing again? Why is it that we have close to 1 billion people malnourished, suffering from different diseases related to our food system and food that is poisoning us instead of feeding us healthily? And I think that it is time for to ask what's going wrong with the food governance at global level, but certainly also at the local and national level. And we are at this crossroads where we think, well, this symptom of having the impression that the achievements of this body, of this Committee on World Food Security, are at stake because governments are retreating from this space. This is particularly true for the developing countries from Africa and Asia particularly. They are not engaged anymore discussing issues of vital importance for the right to food in these countries. And then we see rather the countries which are destroying the multilateral system, the UN system, which is based on the most democratic formula that we have so far found at the international level, which is one country, one voice. Countries like the USA rather taking over the space, trying to transform it back again into a fair of business portraying I guess propaganda on how they are going to feed the world and in a sustainable manner. So it is time to ask these questions. Or why is it that the CFS has not received enough attention and resources by FAO and IFAD? And it seems to be turning isolated. I think that's what we need to say. It hasn't developed the strong voice vis-a-vis fora like, for instance, the World Trade Organization, or even in other parts of the UN system, like the Agenda 2030 on the Sustainable Development Goals. Basically, the CFS is invisible in New York, is invisible in discussions about SDG2. We think that we are not going to give up this space. it's an achievement, it's a victory, it has delivered results. We have seen, for instance, with the CFS guidelines on the governance of tenure of land, fisheries and forests, that social movements can develop, can co-author international law when it comes to the governance of resources. These guidelines have put at the center of the approach the rights of people to their natural resources, the recognition of customary rights, the commons and the collective rights to these resources. And we have seen these movements taking up these guidelines and using them for advancing and strengthening their struggles on the ground. This is an achievement of the CFS. I know that the struggle for land and territory, it continues being a very tough land grabbing, resource grabbing, hasn't stopped. And it hasn't stopped because the structural drivers for it, and I particularly mean the financialization of territories, this power of global finances over the control of these territories is the cause of it. But we have to admit, as I was saying before, that the power of the CFS to check financial flows, to check global finance, is non-existent. And that's the reason why I would say these guidelines cannot make the change. Of course, they cannot operate in isolation. And therefore, what is needed now, we think, is a convergence of movements, of all of us working in different parts of the UN system, in different policy fields, like, for instance, the movements working on finance justice, retaking control of our economies and over our money, and how do we connect and relate to them. This is just one example. We also need to connect to the climate movement, the climate justice movement, because probably finances and climate are two of the absolutely key structural topics of our times. And we need to connect to those movements, to those policy spaces, and make stronger movements that can face these very powerful actors having control over our lives and over our foods and territories. So in that sense, it's also the fact that multilateral spaces are being weakened is also, I think, a manifestation of the authoritarian political forces that are taking control of many countries in our world today. There is a blatant and outrageous disregard of human rights. Nationalistic and authoritarian forces don't want to be bound anymore by universal values as rights. And we think this is also part of the problem that we need to face. We need to reinvent democracy, we need to reinvent human rights, and we need also to reinvent a UN system for the peoples and for people's sovereignty.
That was Sophia with a strong talk and powerful declaration at the end there, calling for the need to reinvent democracy, reinvent human rights, and reinvent the UN system for peoples and people's sovereignty. Continuing that discussion, we will be exploring peasants' rights next episode. A big thank you to Stefano and Sophia, and see you next time.